As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, I'm a journalist based in Reykjavik, Iceland, where today it's a Sunday night when I'm recording, and the Euros football tournament is underway, so I had the very rare experience of watching England win a football game today, which was a lot of fun. But as I've been watching the tournament, I've been doing so whilst playing games and had it on my laptop off to the side. So I've been playing and had one eye on the football. And it's been a really fun weekend. I've played a lot of games. I've played a bunch of new stuff. I've dipped into some old ones that I've enjoyed. And I've got a lot to talk about this episode, including the featured game of the episode, which is a game I started months ago and I've been talking about. It feels like I've been talking about it every episode, but it's a good game. It's a game that I enjoyed. I had a good time with it. It is the Ubisoft open world game, Immortals Fenyx Rising. So I'm looking forward to giving you my final verdict on that one. But before I do, I thought I would start off with a few first impressions of new games that have crossed my path in the last week. The first one is a game that I actually started and finished this weekend. It's called Sludge Life. It's a game that I didn't know much about until I recently heard it mentioned on another show. I can't remember which show it was because I listened to so many, but they gave it quite a glowing review, and it was enough for me to give it a try myself. And this was a really unexpectedly fun game. For some reason, I had it in my mind that Sludge Life was a puzzle game with cards. I don't know where I got that impression from. Maybe from the artwork, which features a kind of a sad ghost cartoon that looks like something that you might find in a puzzle game. But it's not at all. I was really taken aback when I opened it up, because it turns out that Sludge Life is actually a first-person exploration game in which you run around a kind of a dreary industrial park where people also live. There's a tower block where people live. There is like a gym. There is a couple of industrial buildings and a corporate HQ and a trailer park or like a shipping park with containers strewn everywhere. And you run around this sludgy world with a kind of a smoggy pink sky and just a kind of a wet tar on the ground, and all of these buildings are built in this kind of sludge pit. And you run around, you climb things, you get onto rooftops, you scale buildings, you talk to these really funny people that inhabit this little world, and you are a graffiti artist, and you run around, you tag things. You can use a little camera to look at the walls and find tag spots, and you have to scale your way there and leave tags there. And there are other things to do too. You can kind of collect cigarettes and laptops and apps for your laptop. The pause screen and menu screen is a laptop screen that you're looking at. It has a really cool visual style. It has a kind of a VHS roll to the whole thing. It's got a kind of a stonery, kind of hazy quality to it. A really good soundtrack. There are stereos around the industrial complex, and you hear this really fun sort of lo-fi hip-hop as you're walking around. And I actually got sucked right into it, more so than I was expecting. I played it for a couple of hours on my first session and a couple more on my second and finished it off. And I have to say, this was a great little game. I think I'm going to be talking about it more, so I'll leave it there for now. And in contrast to that one, I also picked up Umurangi Generation, the highly rated photography game. I really like the concept of this one. It's like it's different to Sludge Life, but I think they are good side by side. So maybe on the next episode, I will talk about these two side by side. I had a bit of a harder time with Umurangi, despite the fact that it comes much more highly rated and with some hype behind it. I found that it was a little janky and involved more kind of pixel hunting for objects that you are tasked with taking a picture of, which is not my favourite kind of gameplay. But it has a really a deeper scenario involved. I feel like Umurangi Generation has a different thing going on. So although I haven't fallen in love with it off the bat, I am looking forward to finishing it, and perhaps next week I'll talk about Umurangi and Sludge Life. But I also dipped into a couple of games that you will have heard me talk about before. I went back into Signs of the Sojourner because it was in the Itch bundle for Palestine Aid, and it brought it back to the top of my mind because I bought that bundle and saw that little icon, and I thought maybe I'll do one more round of Signs of the Sojourner. And in this round, I actually finally got to the location that I'd been struggling to get to, this like little seaside town called Perseray, where there is some juicy plot detail to be found. But it's a late game location. So I had one more round of Signs of the Sojourner. I was only focused on going to Perseray, so I only went to the corner of the map where you can get the hints that you need to get there. And it was really worth the effort. It gave some really nice story detail. I'm kind of in love with Signs of the Sojourner. I've got a feeling it's going to be on my Games of the Year list come year end. And I've actually been in touch with the developer of that game over at Echo Dog, the director rather, and it looks like we're going to be having an interview with them on the show in the next month or two. So that's really exciting. I'm looking forward to talking about Signs of the Sojourner and delving into that brilliant world that that game inhabits. I've also kept on playing Slay the Spire. I'm playing one run every day, at least at the moment. I'm still really addicted to that one. I talked about it on the last episode, and I've had a lot of fun with it. I'm still playing as the Silent, the second character that you unlock. I've gotten to the second boss, and so I'm making more progress and learning the move set and having lots of fun with it. It's a really addictive game. There's something about it that just keeps me coming back, so even though I've seen credits, I'm going to continue playing Slay the Spire, I think. I've actually just booked a flight now that I have both of my vaccines to go and visit family in the UK, and so I think I'm going to be playing Slay the Spire there because I can't exactly lug my PS4 back with me. So it's nice to have a really good addictive game on iOS that I can just slip into my pocket. I'll take my Switch with me too, of course. But the reason I was thinking about what I could play back in the UK was that I've also been back in Death Stranding. And this is a game that I've had a love-hate relationship with. I've been playing it probably for around a year now. And every time I come into it, I do a couple of hours and then bounce. Because it's quite a tough game in some ways. Not in difficulty, but in the amount of mechanics, the complexity of the story, and the general kind of confusion of the whole thing. It's not a friendly game, you know. It asks a lot of you. It asks you to hang in there for quite a while. But I think just today, actually, I've finally gotten over the hurdle with Death Stranding. I've gotten to a place now where I have additional vehicles, where Sam has robo legs now. He kind of wears this frame on his legs that adds strength, adds balance, and lets him run faster. And the terrain isn't so slippery and treacherous. So I can actually traverse the landscape now in a way that feels fun. And as well, I've gotten used to dealing with the various weapons and tools that you get in the game. Some new things have unlocked, and it really feels like the landscape is opening up, which is great, but it also makes me like more mad at the director of the game for making the player wait until hour 20 before the game finally gets fun to play. I know that this is a controversial game. A lot of people love it, a lot of people hate it. I'm somewhere in the middle right now, but I'm happy to say that I'm tilting positive on it now. I had a really great session today where I took a motorbike and was able to get up into the mountains, into the snow. And the game is really kind of gathering pace, and it's coming together a little. So I'm looking forward to getting to the end of that game. I'm determined to do it. I think I'm 2/3 of the way across the US now, towards the West Coast. And so maybe when I finish that game, I'll do a dedicated episode on it. I know a lot of people love that game, and it is fun to talk about. There's a lot going on there. I also have a couple of new games that I'm adding to my slate. There's a lot of good sales on right now. And so on PlayStation 4, I bought both Rime and Bugsnax, which are in the indie game sale, both for under £10. So I took the plunge on both of them, two games that I've had my eye on for quite a while. And alongside all of this, there was also a lot of game news this week. There have been all of the kind of game reveal festivals going on. And just today, the news came out that there's going to be a sequel to one of my favourite indie games, Far Lone Sails. You may have heard me talk about it. It was featured way back on episode 4 of the podcast. I've talked about it many times since. I've put it into an article on Radical Art Review as a hidden gem that everyone should play. And the sequel is going to come out later this year. And instead of trundling across a post-industrial landscape, this one sees the player taking to the sea. So that's really exciting news. I'm really looking forward to that one coming out. Far Lone Sails is a spectacular game. Quiet and meditative, understated, but really fun to play. It's a great game. I recommend that game to anyone. Fantastic soundtrack as well. And also, over on the Discord for the show, Hopple, who's one of our patrons, who posts very regularly, a good source of fun gaming news and game recommendations, flagged up the Wholesome Games Direct. And I've never seen Wholesome Games before. It's new to me. But it started as a Twitter account at @_wholesomegames. And they had a huge announcement live stream where they put forward, I think, 70 new games that are coming out. There were so many good ones. There were games about painting, games about writing, games where you play as animals, exploration games, resource management games, lots of cutesy Animal Crossing style stuff too. That was really fun. So if you're interested in seeing what Wholesome Games is all about, you can go to wholesomegames.com and see their whole direct there. It's a YouTube embed on the homepage. So that was a really fun one. So thanks to Hopple for that. And that's not the first time that the Discord community around Gaming in the Wild has recommended good games to me. If you would like to be a part of that Discord community, you can join up on Patreon to support the show. The show is Patreon supported at patreon.com/gamingin the wild. And for as little as $1 a month or €3 or €5 or euros or pounds, depending on where you are, you can support this show, help me out, help me get better equipment, help me get games to review, and be a part of the community. I do extra episodes and sale recommendations for my patrons. So if you're interested in supporting the show, it's patreon.com/gamingin the wild. And I'm very appreciative to all of my patrons, so thank you to all of them, and thank you to you if you're interested in becoming a part of it. And with all of that said, let's move on and talk about the featured game of the episode, Immortals Fenyx Rising. So Immortals Fenyx Rising is a game that came out in December 2020. It's by Ubisoft. It came out on all platforms. It's on Windows, Switch, PlayStation, Stadia, and Xbox, with crossplay. It was originally billed as Gods and Monsters for a long time, so a lot of people knew it as that. And hilariously, they had to change the title because of a copyright challenge from Monster Energy, which just seems hilarious to me. I mean, sure, Monster is a trademark and Monster Energy, but they don't own the word Monster. Gods and Monsters has nothing to do with Monster Energy drink. But anyway, that's what happened. It's a third-person action-adventure set in a Greek mythological setting. And it's made by the team who created Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Although it's a very different game in tone and style, it has similar aspects in the gameplay, but it's a really different game. It has more of a vibe of the Disney Hercules movie or Jason and the Argonauts than it does the kind of historical feeling of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And it did pretty well when it came out. It has a Metacritic score of 77 on PlayStation, 78 on Switch, 81 on Xbox. So it's getting around 8 out of 10s from the critics. and that score is reflected in the user reviews as well, so it's been really well received by both critics and players. It has had three DLCs already in the 6 months since it came out. The first one was called A New God, the second one was called Myths of the Eastern Realm, which is a whole separate kind of thing. It's based on Chinese mythology and has a different protagonist. And then there is The Lost Gods, the one that just came out, which offers different gameplay styles. It's got more of a brawler combat thing going on. And all of those are available on a season pass. It ostensibly costs £60, so it's a full price game, although ever since it came out, it seems to have been on a £30 sale. So it seems like they priced it down. It came out in that Christmas holiday period. Maybe that price point has been doing well for them. I've certainly seen a lot of people playing it in social media. So for £30, I think it's a very well-priced game. How Long to Beat has it at 25 hours for the main story, with 40 for main and extras, and 60 hours for completionists. My own playthrough was 45 hours long, and I don't really feel like I even tried to be doing the extras, to be honest with you. I felt like I was just doing the story, although there are many ways to get sidetracked in this game. There is stuff everywhere to do. It's a really crowded landscape with fun things to do, and it's a game that does suck you in. So, yeah, my playtime spiraled up to 45 hours, and I had a good time doing it. I started off playing on the Switch, and it ran well, although I would say that the frame rate was not a solid 30, if you care about things like that. It's a big open world with a lot of high viewpoints where it's rendering a lot at once, and the little Switch did seem to struggle a little. I actually moved over to PlayStation 4. It has cross save, and the publicist was good enough to give me a PS4 code so that I could try out the season pass, and it runs perfectly on a PS4. I played the rest of the game on PS4, so if you have the choice, I would go for one of the higher-end consoles or a PC, but if you're playing on Switch, you'll be fine. It does run pretty well. And I was a little curious about which branch of Ubisoft made this game, so I went and read a couple of interviews about the development process. There was an interesting one on Xbox Achievements website with the associate director, Julien Galudec, and that was a pretty interesting and insightful interview. It was made by Ubisoft at their base in Quebec, but it was also some other teams in Singapore and Bucharest. So I think, like I heard about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where Ubisoft headquarters kind of ran the game, but they farmed out different areas to different teams to kind of spread the workload. So I think this one might have been made in the same way. And Julien also said that they traded off some of the scope of Odyssey for moment-to-moment intensity, and that they were interested in doing a game more engaged with Greek mythology than with the history. Because Assassin's Creed Odyssey was so well researched, right down to the architecture, the kind of fruit and fish and meat that was on the market, the clothing, the layout of the houses, the landscape and the plants. Like, that game was a real deep dive. It was so well researched, you know, to the point at which there are historians using the game in classes now. But in another interview with Scott Phillips, the director of the game, he let slip that the project originated from a bug in Odyssey when they accidentally rendered the ship, Cassandra's ship, with Cyclopses as the crew. And it was a bug that they found interesting, but that they felt didn't fit with Odyssey. And so they became really interested in the idea of making a game solely based on Greek mythology without having that foot in realism that Odyssey had. So it's a really funny origin story for the game. And the game begins when Phoenix, who is a storyteller and a student of mythology, is traveling with her warrior brother. They have a shipwreck. They wash up on a strange island. And so Phoenix wakes up on a beach, much like the start of Genshin Impact, hilariously, a game with which this game shares some DNA. And all of the crew have been turned to stone, so Phoenix goes out on a quest to find out why. The game is narrated by Zeus in conversation with Prometheus, and this took a little bit of getting used to. It's a little bit like the narration in Bastion, where you have someone, kind of a disembodied voice, kind of narrating the things that you're doing and adding context. But rather than that kind of southern drawl of Bastion, this time it's Zeus talking to Prometheus, and it's kind of a comedy routine that just kind of comes in and out of the game whilst you're doing stuff. And that really took some getting used to. I found it really grating at first, this kind of quippy talking going on whilst I was trying to play. But I did actually sort of settle into it. It does play on that theme of storytelling and mythology to have the gods talking about what you're doing. They kind of recite old tales, like when Phoenix is doing stuff to do with Atlas or Daedalus. Then Zeus and Prometheus will start talking about them too and giving extra information, extra context. And so there are times at which you've realized that you're kind of learning about the myths as you're playing and hearing those old stories. So that was actually really fun. And there is a kind of an extra narrator too. The island has been cursed by a titan named Typhon, and Typhon's voice can be heard ringing out sometimes. He only says a couple things. I mean, he says it so often that it started getting on my nerves, actually. He says, "I will make you perfect. It will hurt you, but it will be worth it." And I think I've heard those words, like, you know, hundreds of times during my playthrough. I kind of wish they'd skipped that. But Typhon has cursed the island, and the island is inhabited by Typhon's troops, these kind of purple soldiers that are kind of energy, dark energy warriors. But there are also creatures from the Greek myths. There are giants, cyclopses, Cerberus hounds, and harpies. And so you're going to be battling your way across the island as you try and find out what's going on this golden isle. And at the start of the game, Phoenix makes friends with a fiery bird called Phosphor. And after she's met Phosphor, she teams up with Hermes. The god Hermes appears and guides her to the Hall of the Gods. But there are no gods there. It turns out that along with cursing the island, Typhon has also cursed the gods. He's removed their cardinal virtues and made them into kind of small, lesser versions of themselves where their characteristics have kind of been inverted. So, for example, a warlike god has lost his courage, Aphrodite has lost her vanity, and so forth. I'm not going to spoil which gods are in the game because there are, I think, five gods that you have to deal with, and it was actually really fun wondering who was next and wondering what form they would have been cast down into. So you're dealing with these gods that have been thrown down, and they're very proud, they're very capricious, but they are kind of reduced comedy versions of themselves. And that, again, feels like a Disney script to me. You know, if you've got like a giant war god who has been turned into like a tiny creature and lost their courage, it's a super cartoony premise for a game like this, but it's entertaining enough. So while you're restoring the gods to their former glory and looking for your brother and trying to crack the puzzle of why everyone's been turned to stone and finding out how to turn them back, there is a lot of different gameplay for you to engage with. There are quests, there are puzzles, there are bosses, there are combat trials. And when you restore the gods, each of them gives Phoenix boons that will enhance her combat abilities. There are also marble puzzles. There are loads of puzzles just strewn through the whole environment. It's like you can't walk for 10 seconds without running into something to do. It's an absolutely packed overworld. And while the map might not be huge, there is something to do in every little nook and cranny. There are caves, there are underwater swimming, there are mountains for you to climb and to glide from. There are speed trials and archery puzzles where you have to control an arrow through a series of hoops. So there is lots of varied gameplay. It really keeps you busy. And that's something that I really appreciated. A downfall for me of Ubisoft games is repetition. And there is enough going on in Phoenix. I think they've learned some lessons from Assassin's Creed and from what they did with Odyssey. And they've added enough gameplay elements, enough different kinds of puzzles, and enough different kinds of side quests and stories and traversal challenges and combat challenges to really keep it fresh. You don't feel like you're doing the same thing all the time. They're all kind of jumbled together, so you're always doing something different, and I really enjoyed that about this game. And there are also absolutely tons of collectibles and upgrades that you can get. You can find Ambrosia, which is usually like a purple crystal that's in a really high, hard to reach, inaccessible area, like a mountaintop or on top of a really tall building. There's a lot of architecture dotted across the landscape too, and you can climb up the buildings and explore the rooftops and go inside. There are baskets of pomegranates that you can pick up and make potions from. There are flowers of different colours that make offensive and defensive potions. There are also currencies that I don't understand, to be honest with you. There are these little blobs that you get when you kill enemies, and they come in different colours. and you need different combinations of colours to be able to upgrade your weapons and your stamina and your health. And I don't quite understand what they all were. There's almost too many currencies in this game. But again, I think the upside of that is that it never feels like you're repeating yourself. You're always looking for something else to take the next step and upgrade Phoenix even more. And it's a very entertaining world to run around. It's very colourful. It kind of discards the realistic style of Assassin's Creed Odyssey and goes for a more cartoony style, a little more in common with Genshin Impact and Breath of the Wild, both of which I will discuss in relation to this game more. But it's a colourful world. There's lots of good music. There's a big orchestral score. It's entertaining. When you look around, you'll see V's of geese flying overhead. There is wildlife. There are monsters everywhere. There are temples everywhere and buildings and caves and rivers. You can tame mounts. You can ride across the landscape. You can leap from high places and fly on the wings of Daedalus. So it's a really entertaining action game with a lot going on all the time. It really does keep you amused. But the big divine beast Van Ruta in the room, the big elephant in the room, is Breath of the Wild. And one of the big criticisms of this game is that it's very similar to Breath of the Wild in many ways. And when I was first playing it, I was constantly referring back to Breath of the Wild in my mind, because lots of the game systems are kind of ripped from Breath of the Wild, almost directly. The fact that you kind of can climb on a stamina meter, but you can free climb on anything. You can creep through plants, you can hide, you can climb trees to pick fruit. It's very, very similar. You can also jump into these vaults, which are kind of craters in the ground, and you're sucked down into the vaults of Tartarus to do puzzle shrines that are exactly the same as the Breath of the Wild puzzle shrines, with pretty similar puzzles. And many of Phoenix's core abilities are much like Link's core abilities in Breath of the Wild. But the game does quite well in comparison to Breath of the Wild in some ways. The combat, for example, is better. It's much more detailed, there's more to do. There is airborne combat, so you can jump and strike and kind of duel in the air. There are many more power-ups. There's a sword for fast attacks, an axe for heavy attacks, a bow and arrow. You can jump into the air, and as you're falling, if you draw your bow, you can go into slow motion, like in Assassin's Creed. And you switch between all of these different skills really fluidly. It's really fun, enjoyable, fluid combat. You have so many powerful attacks that the gods give you as you progress through the game. You have a giant sort of phantom hammer that you can produce and rev up for a heavy strike. You have a shield dash. You have some spears that can come out of the ground and propel enemies up into the air. You can then finish them in the air. You have a grapple where you can grapple onto a big enemy and sort of leap up and be pulled onto it and then attack it from sort of on it, like in a Shadow of the Colossus a little bit, although there's nothing quite that big in the game. So there's so much that you can do in combat that it really does feel like it's moved on from where Breath of the Wild set the goalposts in that respect. There's also a telescope that you can use. Something that's been taken from Assassin's Creed Odyssey is that you climb giant statues of the gods and then you survey the area around you, much like the viewpoints in Assassin's Creed. And you can use a telescope up there and kind of strafe the landscape to find things, and they'll be marked on your map. So you can find interesting things, you can find spots to make potions, you can find collectibles. All of these different things can be tracked quite easily. Also, when you're flying in the air, you can kind of dive. You know how in Breath of the Wild you jump off things and you have your hang glider and you hang in the air and you can float across the landscape and it's very chill and fun. But it's also very slow. And in this game you can dive, so you can be very high in the air, see what you're after, and then dive down to the ground. You can also kind of rocket through the air to move really quickly across the landscape. And that's really fun. I think if I ever do go back to Breath of the Wild, in fact, I'm sure I will go back to that game and play it again. It is my favourite game. I think I will actually miss some of these things from Immortals Fenyx Rising, and that's quite high praise for this game. but it's not all good. I mean, I think my favorite thing about Breath of the Wild is this feeling of a kind of vast, peaceful wilderness that you can move through. You can ride your horse through it, going from town to town and place to place, and go along beaches and climb into huge snowy mountains. There's a feeling of space, and that's just not present in this game. It's just a constant action fest in this game. You run for 10 seconds any direction, you're going to find something to do. There is no space in this game, so they've taken that Breath of the Wild premise, but they've just packed a smaller map with stuff to do. And I think that that will appeal to some gamers. Breath of the Wild got critiqued for the openness of the landscape. Some gamers felt that it was boring, that there wasn't enough to do, but I actually found that space to be a really positive, creative decision that they took in Breath of the Wild, that it was a game about nature, that happens in nature. And sometimes you're just running for a long time and the weather's changing around you, the landscape is changing, there are trees and forests, and it's just meditative. Phoenix is anything but. And Zelda, I mean, I think this is actually a really ironic point, this next one, given that Phoenix is based on an actual religion. But Zelda has a very kind of grounded, almost spiritual feeling to it. When you're dealing with this kind of Sheikah religion in Zelda, it feels like it's actually got some grounding. It has a kind of a calm to it and a beauty. And Phoenix is just comedy. It's kind of like fart jokes and action. Very Disney-ish, very silly, very fun. But it lacks the kind of gravitas that Breath of the Wild had. And Breath of the Wild isn't like a super serious game, but it does have a kind of a strong feeling of quality. And whereas Phoenix feels more like a kind of a Hollywood production, if you know what I mean. But all in all, I had a really good time with this game. I played it across a couple months. I took my time with it. I kept coming back to it. And every time I did, I enjoyed it. I kind of washed up a little bit on the third area. There is a kind of an introductory area that I kind of cleaned off and just ticked off every activity on the map and had a good time doing it. It's kind of a small area, I think called Howling Cliffs or something like that. And then there are kind of five different areas for you to really get stuck into the game. And the first two, I really enjoyed. I cleaned them off. I did a lot of what was on offer. But by the time I got to the third one, I was starting to feel a little fatigued of the gameplay. And I know I did say that it doesn't get tired, but it's kind of a classic problem for open world games generally, but specifically for Ubisoft games, I think, is that they start off incredibly well. They work hard to get your attention and to draw you in, and they end incredibly well, and they always come to a really good crescendo and a finale. But often in the middle of all of the Assassin's Creed games that I've played, for example, I've felt that they are padded out a little. And I did feel that the third and fourth God areas kind of suffered by comparison, possibly because the first two are set in a very lush landscape that's really fun to run around, and the second two are in more of a kind of a ravaged landscape, a war-torn landscape. And so the game got a little more murky and a little more dark, and it stopped being quite so fun just running around in all of this natural splendor on the Island of the Gods. So I really lost track a little bit in the third and fourth areas. It took me a little bit of powering through. But the fifth area was very much worth it. The fifth area is, again, like Ubisoft games always end well. And the fifth area is just spectacular. It's a bit of a masterclass. It's kind of all of the gameplay strands of Immortals Fenyx Rising come together. And it really is just like a perfect dessert to this this big open world meal. So I'm really glad that I finished it. The story came to a nice finale as well. I haven't played the DLC, but I think I'll give this game a break and then I'll come back to them and try them out. All in all, I think it's a good game. It's light, it's fun, it's engaging. It improves on some of the source material of Breath of the Wild, which is something that I'm very surprised to hear myself saying as a huge fan of that game. It is a more substantial game than it first seems because of the kind of the comedic tone. It can seem quite light and sort of child-orientated almost, even though some of the humour is a little adult. But there's more to this game than meets the eye. Under the hood, there's a lot going on. There are lots of systems to engage with. And although it loses its way in the middle, it really does come to a satisfying conclusion. Really high quality game. I had no crashes, no bugs or anything like that. All in all, I recommend it, especially at that £30 price point. That's Immortals Fenyx Rising. So that's our episode. Hope you enjoyed hearing about Immortals Fenyx Rising and about all the other games that I talked about today. I've had a really, really good time with games lately. I feel like I kind of really found my stride. I've had 3 or 4 regular games on the go, so I've been playing a round of Slay the Spire, a cheeky one in the morning, and then kind of tucking into something more substantial later in the evening, like Immortals, like Death Stranding. And little games like Umurangi and Sludge Life, which are really cool indie games that have something interesting to say. All in all, it's been a really fun week for games, and I'm looking forward to talking about games like Umurangi and Sludge Life in the future, maybe even next week. I'm also looking forward to getting stuck into Loop Hero, but I've kind of put it into my head that I'm not going to play that one until I'm finished with Slay the Spire. I think there's only so many games that you can have on the go at once, and I've got a feeling Loop Hero might fill that spot. I'm also on social media. If you would like to come and talk to me to tell me what you're playing, to offer comments on the games that I've played this week, and also to see my amazing in-game photography. My latest Instagram post is my spectacular parking in Death Stranding. So if you'd like to see just how well it's possible to park in Death Stranding, come and follow me on Instagram at Gaming in the Wild. I'm also on Twitter as Gaming in the Wild. I'm on there every day talking about games, getting into good conversations and posting questions. I really like posting questions for gamers and seeing what they have to say. There is a pinned tweet on my Twitter now about which game people would like to see made into a Netflix series. It's got over 300 suggestions. More are always welcome. And finally, there is, of course, the Discord and the Patreon. If you've enjoyed this episode and made it all the way to the end, you can support the show by signing up for $1 a month at patreon.com/gamingin the wild. If you're listening on an Apple device, please take a moment right now to go and look at the ratings and to tap that 5-star mark. It helps other people find the show. Reviews are appreciated as well. So thanks very much for listening. I'll be back this time next week with another episode recorded in the UK this time. It's the first time I'll be packing my mic and my little mixer into my case to record an episode overseas. So until then, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye for now.